Good evening, America. Good afternoon, Australia. And welcome everyone who's listening live on Facebook and LinkedIn. This is Tony Lontis on Radio Tony Everyday Business. And we are Tracy Horton and Tony talking about trauma. And this week on Tackling Trauma, I want to remind you that we have a downloadable trauma workbook available from radiotony.com, and it's under Radio Tony co-hosts, and look for Tracy's information where you'll see contact details of how to get in contact with Tracy, and you'll also be able to see where the trauma workbook is. So a reminder that besides listening live, you can find replays of the show on radiotony.com and on the Facebook page as well. We are not psychologists, but we have a long time with lived experience in trauma and enough research and talking about trauma to be able to offer help to people who are suffering in that realm. So just a little bit about my wonderful co-host Tracy. Tracy Horton is an international award-winning speaker, author, and qualified life coach. She's worked alongside men and women for 25 years, helping to rebuild lives and allow people to become the best versions of themselves. She's spent many years helping people create their own authentic journey. She knows about real brokenness as she managed to rebuild her life from that of an alcoholic, abused, poverty-stricken child to where she is today, a passionate, warm, caring, and amazing woman. And her experiences give amazing insight and wisdom and will help you create the life that you dream of. So good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. We were having a chat before the show, and it's absolutely bucketing down rain here in Talabadgera Valley on the Gold Coast, Queensland, Australia. So much so that we lost one lot of internet, and I had to quickly replug the backup internet in. So let's hope that it stays well with us for the show. Now, just to recap, so far in Tackling Trauma, we've talked about trauma in detail. And trauma is an emotional response to a terrible event like an accident, a rape, abuse, natural disaster. And immediately after the event, shock, denial are typical. Longer-term reactions include unpredictable emotions, flashbacks, strained relationships, and even physical symptoms like headaches, nausea, and anxiety. It's impossible to talk about trauma without talking about PTSD. And this is the topic we're going to delve in today. Now, PTSD is a disorder characterized by the failure to recover from experiencing or witnessing a terrifying event. It may last months or years, with triggers that come back and bring the memories of the trauma accompanied by intense emotional and physical reactions. Some of these symptoms include nightmares, flashbacks, avoidance of situations that bring back the trauma, heightened reactivity to certain stimuli, anxiety, and depression. So, Tracy, I know that this is a huge problem across the world. Just how big is the problem of PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder?
Tony, I think it's much bigger than we think, because, again, I think it's one of these things we never talk about and people are embarrassed to have. But yeah. when I'm working with people, I tell them this: it's a normal reaction to an abnormal trauma, an abnormal story, an abnormal circumstance that has come into your life and caused that. And it's out of your control. So for anyone who's had any type of trauma that was out of their control, especially if it was life-threatening or for them or somebody else, or out of context, such as they were young and they couldn't process it, the chances are 92% that they have some sort of dormant PTSD. And that's why I think today it's lovely that we're talking about this, bringing it out in the open and just talking about what it is and how we can help.
Absolutely, Tracy. The statistics around PTSD PTSD mean that this is not an isolated problem? And statistics suggest that 70% of adults will experience at least one traumatic event in their life, and 20% of those people will develop PTSD. So that's about 8 million people in a year, which is a lot of people. Conversely, 7.7 million Americans are suffering or will suffer from PTSD at some stage in their life. And the types of events and the statistics around when PTSD will occur are also bear talking about. So, for instance, 44% of Americans reported at least one symptom of PTSD after 9/11. 51% of patients with chronic low back pain actually had PTSD. 86% of women refugees in Kabul and Pakistan have reported PTSD symptoms. 50% of sexually abused children in the UK have PTSD symptoms. 45%, that's half of all women who are battered or abused, will experience PTSD. 35% of all rape victims will experience PTSD. 100% of US children who witness a parental homicide or sexual assault will have PTSD. So we need to be talking about this in an open, honest, and vulnerable manner. So, Tracy, I know that you have a very real example of your own struggle with PTSD. Would you like to tell our audience about that?
Sure. So just the day before my 16th birthday, I had a very serious car accident with a girlfriend of mine. She was driving. We were in a small car, and I went over a 30-foot cliff, and it bounced and somersaulted several times. And at the end of it, while I was still alive, I was outside of the car. My face was torn to shreds. My eyelids had been reconstructed from other skin and stuff like that. And I was very, very lucky to survive it. I woke up the following morning in ICU, and I was discharged later that day. And my parents didn't attend. My dad had gone by then. When I went home, my mum didn't care less. She said to me, I wish, you know, just make sure you never get the police to my door again. The clothes I wore going in the day before couldn't fit me going out. I'd lost so much blood. They had to tie, I remember them tying a string around my dress. And so for me, because a lot of PTSD has got to do with it being out of your control and an extreme trauma. So for years, I have suffered with PTSD going up cliffs or going round bends or driving in a small laned, you know, highway, stuff like that. Anything to do with cars where there's an off chance that that car can slide off, it's completely irrational. I go from the woman I am now to hot, sweaty palms, to starting to cry, to wanting to get out of the car, to feeling nauseous. And it's been it was a really real struggle for years and years and years. I have it under control now, but for years, it just came at me with no warning at all. And it was horrendous to live through. And I really feel for people that do have PTSD because it shows up unannounced. You don't even know you've subconsciously triggered it, and then it's just there. And that's, I think, the hardest thing is that all of a sudden it's there.
Yes. PTSD is characterized by unwanted feelings arriving at a time when you don't expect them. I know for myself that I had certain triggers after the traumatic disclosure from my daughter around abuse. And from that, certain places and times, I would walk into an event, and for some unknown reason, I would start shaking and crying and would have to physically leave that place to calm myself down. And you do learn how to cope with them. The problem is that you can't always predict when these feelings will take over your body. So it's actually a protective mechanism of your brain saying, get me out of here and get me out of here quick. So part of the process of managing that for me was to say, okay, this is not great, but I am safe now. I am okay. And to remove myself from the situation, that's the only way that I've been able to cope with those. And there's never any, like I would reluctantly mention to anyone that that's what was happening. I would just quietly remove myself from a situation, walk outside, breathe deeply to try and calm that racing heartbeat down. So Tracy, that's one thing that happens for you, isn't it? That sweaty palms and racing heartbeat?
Yeah, it's completely irrational because, like you said, it triggers the amygdala. Everything's triggered subconsciously with PTSD. Yeah. So before you know it, you're in a lather. You're in a real state.
Yes.
And being rational at that moment is really, really very difficult because everything within you is screaming an irrational response because it's trying to protect you. It's trying to save you. And so over the time, because, you know, for me, I've developed a lot of courses and I've done a lot of study around a lot of stuff, often because I've needed it, not because I'm this incredible world savior, but because I've needed it. And so when I came up with a 5-step program on how to deal with PTSD. And the first one is to truly find it, to understand why you feel helpless.
Yeah.
And to educate yourself around it, because your mind doesn't know times or dates or truths.
Yeah.
It only knows facts, and it only knows the things that you make it into being a fact. So, for instance, if I make it a fact that grey hair is prettier than any other colour here, and I dye my hair grey no matter what everybody else thinks, I'll walk around thinking I look amazing because that became a fact to me. And that's why a lot of the Polynesian cultures I grew up in, a fact about the Polynesian culture is the bigger you are, the more beautiful you are, the richer you are, the more to be esteemed. So, you know, consequently, when you look back in history, even now, a lot of our leaders in our Polynesian culture are huge people because we see it as a fact that that is honourable. So the first
thing
I always teach.
Which is quite lovely, I have to say. What a lovely way to look at life, you know. Beautiful way to look at life.
So the first thing for me was to work out why I was helpless and what I could do about that. So, you know, to be really practical with you, a lot of the time I would drive. I just found that took back some control for me. If I was in, because I wasn't driving on the car accident when I nearly lost my life, I was in the passenger seat. So, you know, to actually be driving actually gave my mind something to think about and to focus on it. And, you know, the second one, I always talk about explaining it, you know, working out why it was PTSD. Well, I actually nearly died. And the combination of that happening so quickly and then not even quite being 16, but my parents not showing up, not having any support, was really traumatic for me. Which is incredible considering the trauma I'd already lived through. But it's funny what you will focus on. Because sometimes, Tony, people can have several different traumas, but PTSD will locate the one, the last one or the bigger one or the one that they can't explain. And then expose it. I'm a big believer in people, working with people. You know, for me, I am married to one of my biggest support people. Paul is fantastic. He's always been really good at listening to me and then working with me. So if he was to drive, he would assure me at the beginning of the drive that I was in control. We could pull over anytime we wanted to. Sometimes I'd say to him, just talk to me, just talk about anything. I just need to talk so I'm not tempted to look over the hill or something. And every now and then he would say, let's go for lunch up at Mount Tambourine, and it would be a challenge for me. And so he was really good at not forcing me. We never argued. He never gave me a hard time. He never told me to push through it. He was really loving. And I think people just really need that support. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. I actually think that one of the big things in managing PTSD is actually talking about it, because the more that you talk about it and the more that it becomes rational. So when I think of it now, I no longer think of it as an irrational. I understand that my body is trying to protect me and that my brain is in protection mode. And I actually have a little script that says, thank you for protecting me. thank you for reminding me that at that time I felt vulnerable and out of control. I'm okay now. It's going to be all right, and I am safe. So those, I have a little script that I run through my brain, and as I use that over the years, it's just become more and more powerful. And again, I have to agree with Tracy that when we talk about these things, when we shine the light on them, they cease to have the power that they once did. If you're suffering from PTSD and you've got no one to talk to about it, it becomes a much bigger thing in your life. So never underestimate the importance of conversation in dealing with PTSD, because once you start to talk to people, you'll understand that there are lots and lots and lots of people that have struggled with PTSD. And we read the statistics before, so there's guaranteed to be someone in your friend circle or family or social circles that's battled with this. They may never have talked about it, but by talking about the physical symptoms that you suffer and what your mind goes through will help ease your anxiety, help make you feel that it's okay or it's going to be okay. And it does take time. You need to be really kind to yourself. This is not something that you're just going to get over and push through. It takes work and time, doesn't it, Tracy?
Oh, it does. It really does. And I think allowing yourself to be okay with it is a really, really big deal. I'm a real advocate for talking about mental health and about it being just that. I think the healthiest thing we can do is address mental health like we address physical health. You know, nobody looks down at somebody if they've got a sprained wrist or a shoulder socket issue or a middle ear infection. And I think it's time we just had exactly the same approach to all this other stuff. I think the challenge for us is that people feel so weird about it and so self-conscious about it, they medicate. Yeah. And one of the things you can't do with PTSD is add alcohol or drugs. Because PTSD heightens you so quickly, if you have stimulants, you are going to be off the Richter. You are going to do something stupid. You are going to break through a wall. You are going to slam a car door. You are going to veer off the road. You are going to do something really silly.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that is one of the things, you know, we often hide this. But here's the thing, Tony. PTSD can be hiding. I think those stats are actually quite low. I think they're higher than that. Because I know I've had women come to me and they've never been able to marry. Yes. And when we've talked about it, PTSD from sexual abuse stopped them being intimate.
Yep.
You know, there's people that have never got their license because they've had PTSD from a massive car accident. You know, and so I think if we just talk about it, talking about it's really brave and really bold. And you know, for me, I would never have been able to start to get over it if I hadn't told my husband, listen, I need to tell you what goes on for me, and I need to tell you it's PTSD, which means I'm not fully responsible. I want to be, because I want to educate myself and heal, but right now in that irrational moment, I am irrational.
Yeah. And you can't treat something that's irrational with rationality. You actually just need someone to hold that space with you while you discuss what's going on in your body and brain. Because it's not just one or the other. It's always accompanied by whatever is going on in your brain is transferred to your body. So that cold, sweaty palms, that racing heart, that sickness in the pit of your stomach, that's all PTSD. And you'll be just, I know for myself, you just want to get out of that situation. There's like wild horses couldn't drag you away fast enough out of that particular situation when you're feeling like that. So there's just no way that someone saying just push through it or or just get over it. That's not going to work. So we need people to understand that in that moment, if you can just be with that person and listen to what they're saying, because the listening and the expressing of what you're going through will be the most important help. Again, I'm such a believer in highlighting and talking about the secret life of our brain and our body, because then it ceases to have power over you. The more often that you talk about it, the less power it has over your life. If you keep trying to deal with it in secret and by yourself, I don't think it's ever going to work, Tracy. You would know from your work with people across the planet that that doesn't work, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, Tony, my heart breaks for people that live through trauma, because having lived through it, I know when it fronts up, it takes up residence. It builds a campsite. And it takes a strong person to deal with trauma. And I've been very fortunate that I've had a network of friends such as yourself, mature women who understand, a husband who is to die for, kind, to die for, gentle, like a brilliant, brilliant man that has got me when nobody else was getting me, way back 35 years ago when we met. But, you know, for people that don't have that, I'm a real advocate for them sourcing it in the community with counsellors, groups, psychologists, support groups, lots of PTSD support groups. Because, like I have always said, we cannot write our story in someone else's handwriting. That would be a shame. No. So for me, trauma has a lot of writing in my book. It's written a lot of chapters. And the only person who could go back and erase some of that or finish the chapter with a different story was me. And it's the biggest, most powerful thing you'll ever do for yourself. But you do need a lot of support, and you need to be ready, which is why I'm a huge advocate of people listening to shows like this, grabbing our books, you know, getting that free download, learning this stuff, and finding the support that they need. Because it's a shame to be held captive by this stuff when there is a way for you to be free.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tracy, the other thing that I wanted to talk about today is there are five types of post-traumatic disorder, and they're characterized by a normal stress response, which is something that occurs when the PTSD begins. It doesn't always lead to a full-blown disorder. So it usually happens in incidents of accidents or illnesses or surgeries or somewhere where there's an unreasonable amount of tension and stress that lead to this response. So that's the most simplest form of PTSD. Then you get acute stress disorder, where people who've been exposed to what feels like or what was a life-threatening event. So that's like natural disasters, losing a loved one, death of someone close to them, that all trigger an acute stress disorder. If left untreated, the acute disorder tends to develop into the longer blown full PTSD. And acute stress disorder can usually be treated with individual or group therapy. Sometimes medication helps, and sometimes intensive treatments from psychiatrists. Uncomplicated PTSD is again linked to one major traumatic event versus multiple events. It's the easiest of the PTSD to treat, and the symptoms of uncomplicated PTSD include avoidance of the trauma reminders. You might have some nightmares, flashbacks, irritability, mood changes, and changes in your relationships. And again, easily treated by therapy, of which talk therapy is the most popular, sometimes medication and sometimes a combination of both. So the next in the five stages is a complex PTSD, and it is multiple traumatic events and not just one. So we're talking about ongoing domestic violence, we're talking about ongoing war, community violence, or multiple traumas in one. So that leads up to a complex PTSD, and it's more intense with more intense symptoms. You're often diagnosed with something else that is sitting behind the PTSD, sometimes some personality disorders or some dissociative disorders, and that's related to the strength and the magnitude of the trauma, multiple traumas that you've been through. There can be behavioral issues such as aggression, substance abuse, and sexual impulsivity, all related to this more complex PTSD. It may also lead to other mental health issues, including intense rage, depression, and panic. And finally, you have a comorbid PTSD. So this is a blanket term that relates to PTSD in combination with a whole range of other disorders. And this can occur when someone has had a pre-existing mental health disorder and it's combined with multiple traumatic events, and it becomes quite a complex condition to manage. And the people in this PTSD category are often self-medicating and have very destructive behaviors. And it takes a lot more work once you have this level of PTSD. So Tracy, can we talk about some of the stages of PTSD that people live through?
Sure. You know, Tony, I've often said to you that I hear a lot of cases. I have a lot of people come into this very office I'm sitting in now and tell me stories that break my heart daily. You know, no man is meant to go to war and watch somebody bleed out or die, let alone a friend.
Correct.
Nobody's meant to wake up to a partner gone, or to be sitting in their lounge only to hear somebody call out and their child is drowned. You know, this is the stuff that happens. You know, no one's meant to watch dad hurt mum or mum hurt dad regularly. No one's meant to have their parents come at night to bring them harm. None of this stuff is meant to happen in humanity. So when it does, those stages have to kick in, because we aren't wired to cope with that. We're wired to fight it. We're wired to fight against it. And what happens is, when we're fighting against it at such a high rate, we get adrenal fatigue and we get exhausted. And that's when our body says, hey, this is PTSD. I'm going to send out all the alarm bells so that you back off. At the sheer mention of it, you back off, because you don't have it in you to do it anymore. And you know, those stages, they break my heart, Tony, because as you and I both know, working with men and women here in Australia, there are so many people that are suffering from this, and there's so many people in those stages. And I think the hard thing is, like you said, with those stages, it's not till the last one that it becomes really obvious to everybody that you're not coping.
Yeah.
You know, by the time you're drinking or taking drugs or self-medicating with food and you're 142 kilos, you know, you're despondent, you know, often at that stage, the depression has set in. You stopped caring for yourself. But until then, the others could be quite masked. So I think, you know, for me, I always say to people, if you have something that goes off in the pit of your stomach irrationally, if you're just doing life and there's no reason for you to feel insecure or unsafe, and you do, and it comes from a deep pit thing where it doesn't even make sense to you, you need to stop and check in with yourself and ask what is going on.
Because sometimes you might think that a particular traumatic event hasn't affected you. You might think that you're okay. But my recommendation is always that if you've witnessed something, you've been involved in any sort of traumatic event, you need to talk to someone about that to unpack just what you're feeling. And if you don't, then you might reach the later stages of PTSD without even realizing, because you won't allow yourself to talk about it or unpack it or investigate it. Do you find that in your practice, Tracy, that people don't come to you until they're at that end stage where it's really difficult to manage?
I see people at all different stages. But do you know, Tony, one of the things I really want to talk to our listeners about is that end stage is not always outwardly destructive. I have a woman that I see regularly as one of my clients. Her daughter drowned in the pool. while she was asleep one Sunday afternoon. No fault of her own. She had a blended family. Her husband's kids had let the other baby in, and next thing we know, there was an accident. It was an accident. So she is now just over 60. She owns her own home, drives a BMW, holds down a job, but medicates herself to sleep every night. Won't own a house with a pool. Can't watch her grandchildren swim in the pool. So sits with her back to the pool at every family event. You know, sometimes that fifth stage is not destructive. It's not the guy that's ranting and raving at the end of the bar. It's the guy that gets into his BMW and tells himself to not cry, to not cry, and pops the pills with the water bottle. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think if anything, Tony, I want people to understand that this is something every human can suffer. Yes. And at some stage in your life, you're going to have a trauma. I wish that was not so. If I could give this world anything, I would give it that we didn't have to have trauma. But we are going to. Many of us bury some children. Right now, our family is facing the trauma of my youngest daughter having cervical cancer. And in 7 days, she's had two major operations. And I'm watching. We are a tight-knit family. Her sisters are married, but they're all looking after her. She's bedridden at the moment. Her children are staying with me. And I'm very mindful that we are under stress. Yes. And I'm being very mindful to cover that for everybody and to keep it talking about it. Because sometimes healthy people still have trauma. And they deal with it healthy, but it doesn't end up being really healthy. And this woman, that my client, she came to see me because a niece of hers overdosed, and she realized that she was close. And so she came to me to prevent that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not always ugly. It's not always outward. And that's why I think it's nice that we're peeling back the layers of this, because if you've had deep trauma, then the chances are PTSD is lurking. Like you said, Tony, as a protection mechanism, but in the end, it's not protecting you, it's hurting you.
Yeah. Again, the statistics don't lie around PTSD. It's an absolute fact that you will know someone if you've not suffered from PTSD or PTSD symptoms yourself. And so the desire for Tracy and I is to keep this conversation going so that we start to make it okay for people to talk about this. I was on a mental health panel earlier this week, and one of the panelists was a veteran from Afghanistan, and he said that it took at least 5 years for him to realize something was wrong, and 10 years before he accepted any sort of help to help him deal with what he'd seen in that war environment. That's a long time to live in life and to be doing life and not doing it at your best, because PTSD will impact you. And even if it's not visible to the rest of the world, it will be visible to you. So your example of the wonderful woman who sat with her back towards the pool, that's a behavior that would not have existed had she had the outlet to talk about that horrible drowning of her child all those years ago. And she's in her 60s, Tracy.
She is. You know, another guy that came to me was an SAS soldier, and Australia got deployed over to Thailand with the tsunami, the Boxing Day tsunami, and they had to do cleanup. Basically, they were all sent to help clean up and help sort out the bodies. And what they would do is they would pile them up. They would pile them 7 or 8 high, and then they would categorize them, work out who they were. So that's traumatic enough.
Oh,
but
God.
At the same time, every day they would bring in packed lunches. And this guy, they took a photo of him and his mates, and without even consciously realizing what they're doing, they were eating a hamburger sitting on a pile of dead bodies. And when he saw the photo, it gave him such a shock.
Oh.
he shut down. So he is into his fourth marriage and he's like 40. And he came to me saying, listen, I don't know what's wrong with me, but every time they bring up a problem, my attitude is first world problems. And then I asked him to do something on his computer and he brought up his computer and a screensaver photo was this photo. And I said to him, what the hell is that? And when we unpacked that and when we unpacked how deeply he had to press that down to get it, to deal with that. Because otherwise he would have had PTSD on the spot.
Yes.
You know, like he wasn't, and you know, we forget that people that go to war, they're heartfelt men, they're courageous men, they're men that wear their hearts on their sleeves, they're women that wear their hearts on their sleeves. You know, people that get abused or people that lose children, they're just like you and I.
Yes.
And you know, sometimes I think we forget to just talk about this, and no one had ever said to him, hey, that photo, you must have been dead inside to have put that on as your screensaver.
Yeah.
And when I challenged him on that, it changed his life because no one had talked about it because people look at it and get horrified. But sometimes with PTSD, you've got to, you know, I'm a big advocate for this, Tony. If you don't step back into your shadow, you cannot find your strength. You cannot emerge a hero if you don't do the cave work.
Yeah. Yep.
And
so,
you want to be your own hero. You do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's often what happens when something is so incredibly traumatic. It gets pushed down and pushed down, and you don't. The thought of unpacking that is so painful that it takes something many years down the track to go, whoa, look at that photo. And yet he was oblivious to that until you challenged him on that. And again, that's something that people can help other people with. If you see something that really doesn't quite sit, then gently perhaps ask that person about that. So Tracy, would you have, let's talk about your client, the 60-year-old who was unable to face the pool when her grandchildren are swimming. If you had been around her social circle, would that have triggered something in you to try and get her to open up about that?
I don't think people in social circles are often triggered by it because we're so accommodating. You know, people in your social circle, you accommodate them. I had idiosyncrasies for years that nobody noticed because they were just part of who Tracy was. Yeah. You couldn't sit Tracy in the corner. You couldn't put Tracy in a corner where she couldn't get out. She, you know, I hated, you know, I would get triggered sitting in the corner at the end of a table where there was no escape and stuff like that. And I think it was really only that my husband would challenge me on this stuff because he would see it. And he saw it because I started raising my children with him, obviously, and I had a little few things hanging over and he started questioning me on them. So I think two things. I think if you do see something, just have a conversation. Just have a conversation because sometimes I haven't been ready to deal with it, but the fact that Paul had the conversation meant I could come back and have the conversation when I was. But I also think too, I think there's a lot of responsibility for people to truly think about them because we always know, Tony, we do. We don't blindside, we don't wake up alcoholics blindsided without a reason why it happened. She knew what she was doing. She knew. So in some ways, you know, when I worked with her, and I just want to say I have permission to tell the story. You know, when I worked with her, her actually taking responsibility for that, you know, and not just because, you know, she would just have this bravado that nobody would challenge her. But, you know, when she actually got soft and vulnerable about it and actually owned it, then, you know, things could truly change.
And what sort of change did it bring about for her? What sort of positive impact did it have once she started to unpack this stuff and started to heal?
You know, the hardest thing any human does is face the pain associated with trauma, which is why we go into PTSD. You know, for me, Tony, it wasn't the fact I had 141 stitches on my face. It wasn't the fact that I had cuts on my in my head. It wasn't the fact I've, it was the fact that nobody was there. I woke up in ICU on my own. And when a friend from school took me home, my mother didn't even get up to hug me, and it was my 16th birthday. And when I actually located that pain and I actually dealt with that, the PTSD halved overnight, because I'd actually found the pain point. You know, so actually having to come to terms with the fact that no matter how it happened, you lost your child. That even though you were only serving your country, you watched people die. And nobody prepares you for that.
No.
You don't go into psychiatric teaching before you go and pick up a gun and go to war. And you know what I mean? Like, if your child was abused, you didn't open the door and say, please do it. You know, just coming to terms with all this. For me, you know, coming to terms with the fact that, yes, I was abused, but that wasn't all I was. You know, I say it in my book all the time. I had a terrible start, but I don't have a terrible life. I have a fantastic life. You know, and I think just really coming to terms with all this and just making it commonplace to talk about it. And I can't stress enough, if people do not have that type of relationship, like this woman didn't feel she could talk to her husband, her sisters about it. She had three sisters. She didn't feel she could talk to any of them. I think the fact that she then sought out somebody like me, a trauma counselor, a trauma mentor, you know, to I think that was really brave of her, because she knew she needed to talk to someone. Because when you wake up at 9 in the morning and you're shaking, needing alcohol, you got to talk to someone.
Tracy, just briefly, alcohol or alcoholism, there's always something behind it, isn't there? Always.
We, as humans, we are designed to save ourselves. So when we self-destruct, and I'm a big believer in not separating alcoholism, because in this country, and I don't know in America, maybe some of our listeners can tell us, but in Australia, obesity is one of our biggest self-medicators, and no one's addressing it, and we're huge in our numbers now. So, you know, there, and there's prescription drugs. I mean, you can go, you know, I know women who earn seven figures and drive Porsches, and they are self-medicating on those scripts like nobody's business. And that doctor is part of the problem. I know people that medicate from relationships. They just go in and out of relationships. They have to always have the latest. I mean, I know people who shop to self-medicate. So, but whenever it's destructive, because we are designed to enjoy everything within reason. We're designed to have, to be happy and to enjoy stuff. And I know for myself, there is nothing nicer than a Saturday afternoon with a couple of girlfriends. It's hot here in Australia already, and some nice rosé with a couple of ice cubes in it. There is nothing nicer than that. But when I'm waking up at 4 a.m. looking for that drink because I don't know how to make good with my husband in the morning, that's really different. They're two totally different scenarios. So whenever there's something in your life and it's an addiction, which means you can't stop it or bring it back into alignment. I have a lady, and again, I have permission to talk about this. I am currently working with a woman who puts $100,000 a year on credit cards, self-medicating with the joy of shopping. It's the only thing that brings her joy. Pays for two places where storage units, and her husband knows nothing about, just puts it all straight there now.
So there's something behind that's driving that behavior, isn't there? And it's
very
usually something
deep sadness of a broken childhood. There's always something, because we're not designed for that extremes. We're designed for balance. Our body is designed for balance. We have two of everything. Our left and right side work together. The universe has day and night. We live in seasons. We are so in tune with all that. We don't realize it, but we are designed for balance. It comes naturally to us. So when something's out of balance, the thing you need to do is sit with yourself and ask the question, do you know what it is? And if you don't, you have to ask the question to someone else who can see it.
Yeah. Tracy, do you find in some of your clients that their trauma is buried so deeply that it takes quite a while to work out what it is? Or do people actually know what that trauma is, but they just can't talk about it?
There's people always know. People always know. They do. Yeah. Because you don't, by definition, trauma is something that shows up and occurs to you and brings about an unwanted change. So you always know that moment. But there's two types of people that end up in my office. The very strong, the people that are strong enough to bury it for everybody else. And Tony is shaking your head because, my darling, that was you. Was that not you?
Absolutely.
Was that, and you know, the strong end up in my office because they bury it and bury it because they don't want to upset their husband by falling apart. They don't want to lose their job by addressing it. They don't want to put it on the kids. They don't want the kids to come home. And the
or
other
you don't,
thing.
You don't want to bring it up to a family that will just castigate you for daring to talk about it because they don't want to talk about it and they don't want to deal with it. And that's tough.
Yeah, so it's the people that have the capacity to put up with it for a really long time. And those are the people that are actually really, really are my, I guess, my niche, because I'm a big believer that will shorten your lifespan.
Absolutely.
You will become 65 and you will have cancer, you will have something, because you're putting your body under a lot of stress that it's not coached to deal with. But the other sort of people that front up in my office are people that are holding it because of other people. They need to wait till mum dies to actually be real about what dad did. They served their country, so they can't dare talk about it because they went in fully exposed. Yes, if you signed up to go to war, you did make a conscious decision. It doesn't take away 1 ounce of the fact that you saw atrocities you never should have, and it's okay that upsets you.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you think, Tracy, that humanity, and I'm thinking about traumatic events, so we are exposed via the media and everything that we see to quite traumatic events playing out on our screens. Do you think that the reason some people don't talk about the trauma is because some of that stuff is so acceptable? We see it in movies, we see it in social media, we see it, and therefore they think, oh, that's pretty normal, therefore why do I need to talk about it? Do you have people that you counsel on that level as well?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in people understanding that the media, especially here in Australia, look, I watch the news every morning, but in all honesty, I have no children in the house, but it is definitely one-sided. They don't bring up the happy stories. They don't tell us about all the people that made good on promises, all the people that actually made payday, all the people that bought homes. They're just telling us about the people that are homeless. You know, like the reason is because that stuff sells. So I have that little bugbear on the side of me. But really, we are desensitized, and we're desensitized a lot by movies and programs. You know, I've been watching, if you watch over history, whenever we've decided to do something, the media will teach it to us. So we have in Australia, we've become more and more obviously openly gay, talking about LGBT, allowing them, and I'm all for that. But if you look back, places like sitcoms and stuff like that, they just started talking about it. They just started introducing it to us. So I think, you know, for sure, I mean, how many times do you go to the movies and there's a murder? Yes. How many times, you know, do you go to a movie and there's road rage?
Yes.
Or, you know, somebody, you know, I always, when my kids were growing up and, you know, they had a couple of programs they'd watch, I'd say to them, don't think that's real. The girl that sleeps with all five boys in the neighborhood doesn't end up loved by them all. Don't think that's real. Yeah. So, you know, there is definitely that. But I still believe, over and above all of that, most people hide their trauma and their PTSD symptoms for the sake of others because they're trying to be strong.
Yeah. Because it's not in your best interest to be in a state where you are worried about, and I'll use the example of walking into a family event and you've got so much anxiety about being in the same room as those people, but you still do it because it's expected of you. What would your life be if you didn't feel so anxious that you had to associate with those people that caused you trauma? What would your life be like if you didn't have to deal with that, or you were at a place where you were healed enough to be able to deal with it? So I think people put up with so much that they don't need to, and so much that they could heal themselves from, and particularly around trauma and PTSD. I think that there's a great, big, wonderful life out there for you to lead. And sometimes that just means dealing with trauma, dealing with your PTSD, and then starting to live that wonderful life. Because as you said, Tracy, we're meant to be living beautiful, abundant lives, aren't we?
We are, for sure. You know, I have an autistic grandson and he's taught me so much, so much, Tony. And autism is a lot of things.
Gorgeous.
And that kid does not have an easy life. But it gives him one gift, and that is that everything is black or white. So that kid cannot be talked into anything, and he calls everything as it is. And as a family, it's been a bit refreshing for us because I've actually studied it, and I've been saying to people, you know what, we all need to be like Dom. Like when he walks into the house to see me for the first time, his kisses and cuddles are so intense and so passionate. But, you know, not an hour later, I'll ask him if he wants to have a bath. And if he doesn't, he's not bathing. And sometimes I think we're so afraid of being socially acceptable and we're so afraid of rejection. But in actual fact, sometimes we need to be black and white and give ourselves a gift. Yeah. My father is a schizophrenic with 5 dissociative personalities, and he was very violent. Greatest gift I ever gave myself was releasing myself from the thought I had to have a relationship with him. Do I miss him?
Yeah.
Yes. Would I love to have a relationship with him? Yes. But is my life better off by not? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I could not. I would be a medicated head case if I had to stay in a relationship with him because of the way it works. So you know what? Sometimes you have to give yourself a gift of just calling it for your own sake. Putting yourself first instead of being socially acceptable for everybody else, being just that little bit autistic, because I tell you what, Dom does not care. And that's the gift that it gives him.
And that's the thing, Tracy. Does it matter if he has a bath? Well, no, it might matter if he doesn't have one for 3 months. But in that day, at that time, does it matter? No, it doesn't. You know, and it is a beautiful gift, isn't it? Dom, I have to say, having met Tracy's little man, he's just a beautiful, cuddly little soul. He just makes me smile every single time I see him. And I've seen him when he's not, you know, being great. And I still think he's a very special little man. But coming back to that whole idea that we live our lives based on what other people think, and in particular in terms of trauma and PTSD, we have to start putting ourselves first. If you don't or can't do something and you keep forcing yourself to do that just because that's what the world expects, you're never going to heal from that in the first instance. And so I'd like to say to the listeners out there, if there's something that you do that triggers you, stop doing it. The world's not going to fall apart, and you can revisit that thing at a later date. But please talk to someone about it. Talk to people like Tracy or a counselor, a psychologist. There are so many people out there that you can talk to that will help you with this. And the burden shared with someone halves the burden on you, and you can start to move forward in your life and create that better life, which is what Tracy has demonstrated. If there's anyone I know who demonstrates what it is to have lived through, recovered from, healed from trauma. And that's not to say that either of us, we've both had trauma, either of us are perfect. I'm not. I know Tracy's not. But we have the best life that we can because we've done the hard work, faced that PTSD and trauma head on and done something about it.
Sure. And like I say to people, it is going to hurt. If you are listening yes. today and you have PTSD, you've become aware of that. To deal with this now is going to hurt. But can I just say, it's going to hurt half what it's already hurting.
Correct.
It hurts longer. It's worse to hold the pain.
Yeah.
The short-term pain and the short-term hurt that you're going to have to feel will free you. You know, I haven't had a nightmare in 30 years. I don't wake up in cold sweats. I'm not repulsed by my husband. I have a healthy sex life. I'm breaking down all the barriers. And that's it was 2 years of hell. There was days. There was days I couldn't talk. There was days I couldn't stop crying. You know, but it's a well-known fact that women who do not deal with sexual abuse, when they hit menopause, it comes back up for them. And it comes back up because it's the same emotional tract as when they start to menstruate. And all of a sudden they start falling apart and don't know why. I don't have that because I dealt with it. So here's the thing, right? You save yourself 30, 40 years of pain.
Oh,
it is going to hurt you. It is going to be tough. And the you know the hardest thing, Tony, is only ever the first sentence.
I was just going to say.
The first purchase of the book, just getting on the website and buying the book. Yes. That's the hardest part. The rest, after you've made that decision, you know, the rest will be much easier for you.
Yeah. So, guys, once again, we are at the end of our program. And once again, we've had a very, I hope, helpful conversation about PTSD and trauma. Tracy and I will continue on our series of Tackling Trauma next week. And just know that you can reach out. And just before we run out of time, Tracy is tracyhorton.com.au. Oh, sorry. Is it au? Was it just .com?
.com.
Yeah, tracyhorton.com. That's Tracy with an E, Horton.com. She has a wonderful book called The Unhappy Smile, which is so packed. If all you do and you're listening today and you're suffering, jump on a website and grab that book. So, people, thank you so much for staying with us today to listen to what is a tough topic to talk about, but one we both feel absolutely needs to be talked about again and again and again till people start to heal. And there's a lot of healing that needs to happen across the world at the moment. Tracy, thank you for coming on Radio Tony again today.
My pleasure. Thanks everyone for listening.
And that, my wonderful people, is all for this week. We'll be back again same time next week. Thank you, and over to you, TJ. Bye for now.